Welcome to this episode of The Wolf and the Shepherd. Today we're going to talk a little bit about cryptocurrency. Tales from the Crypto. So let's kind of take a not too deep dive in. We don't take too deep of a dive. We want to try to avoid too many rabbit holes here. But for those folks out there that don't really know quite what cryptocurrency is all about, or maybe they do and maybe they have some kind of a beginning understanding of crypto, let's kind of dive in and figure out exactly what is all this cryptocurrency stuff all about.
This is one of those topics I thought we might actually address in an earlier podcast, but with Bitcoin being in the news more recently because of the price,
right,
its valuation being pretty high.
It has, yeah.
That, you know, I figured it was time for us to actually, you know, get to grips with the topic.
Yeah, we have put it off for a while.
Yeah.
And it's probably time we stop putting things off. Like, sure. We put everything off.
Yeah.
So now, yeah, we'll go ahead and check this one off the box of things we've been putting off for a long time and finally getting around to.
And unfortunately, this is one of those topics which, as much as you like to keep it basic, it's almost impossible to explain cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin
without digging
a little bit deeper. Otherwise, you don't...
Deeper than Bill Von digs, right?
Yeah.
We're gonna dig a little bit deeper than Bill Von digs.
Deeper than 18 inches.
Fair enough. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you got to do that.
For those of you confounded by that comment, Bill Barr is one of our good friends who owns one of the largest digging companies in Texas. And we interviewed him a few weeks back. And we're really excited to see how close to the center of the earth he had got. And it turns out that his average hole is between about 18 and 24 inches. So we had to change our approach. We had to change our approach.
Not that close to the
center of the earth. It was a fun interview, but we had to scrap half the questions we were going to ask about getting to the core of the earth and if there were dinosaurs living underground.
Yeah, and by the way, once again, that's why we don't do too much research.
Yeah.
Because the one time we actually did all the research, we had to throw it all away.
Yeah. So,
but what are you going to do?
Yeah. But anyway, like I was saying, this is one of those topics where, you know, we do have to kind of scratch a little bit below the surface so that it answers the average person's questions about Bitcoin. And unlike a lot of topics, people have quite a few more questions about cryptocurrency and Bitcoin.
I think there's more questions out there than there are answers, to be honest with
you. That's it. I mean, although I found answers to a lot of the stuff I didn't know, it's not easily digestible. But and then you make a statement and then you have to give another four statements to support that statement, otherwise it doesn't make any sense. So
no, it makes total sense. Sense. So we're gonna give everybody that kind of overlying ability to completely understand cryptocurrency by the time this podcast is done.
Well, I won't go that far.
Okay.
So
set my sights too high once again. Sorry.
Yeah. So what we'll be mainly referring to throughout this podcast is really Bitcoin. Obviously, there are other cryptocurrencies.
Bitcoin being the big daddy of cryptocurrencies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the basic understanding of cryptocurrencies for anybody who's looked into it even slightly is that, you know, it's a digital method of currency, which for the most part isn't controlled by any central government or authority.
Okay.
And, you know, they're reliant upon something called blockchain technology. And that's a kind of digital distributed ledger of all the transactions that take place. And
that ledger being some kind of a spreadsheet floating out there in cyberspace that's got everything written down.
Yeah, but it's very encrypted, and you know, it's not like somebody can look onto your computer and kind of, you know, find out everything you've been
doing. Right. It's not like giving somebody your username and password to your Chase bank account and saying, hey, here's all my transactions.
Yeah. Now, actually, the ledger for something like Bitcoin is actually public. If they have your Bitcoin address, which is like a wallet address, which you can, I guess, somehow equate to maybe your login to, say, your Chase account online, it will give all your transaction details and to the other addresses. But those addresses in themselves don't tell you who those who that person or company was. So if you spend $30 in Bitcoin, they can see it went between one address and another address, but they can't tell who those addresses belong
right.
to.
So what you're telling me is you can go on my public wallet address and see that I spent $30 in Bitcoin, but you can't tell that I spent $30 at the liquor store. You just know I spent $30.
Right, sure.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So, you know, this decentralized kind of ledger, as long as nobody controls more than 50% of that computing power on the network, which, you know, basically controls that blockchain, that's what we consider decentralized. If somebody actually controls the majority of the network, then it's called centralized just simply because they have control,
right?
You know, an influence on, you know, various factors such as the value of that coin. They can manipulate the value of that coin a lot easier.
Majority rules.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
Yeah. So, you know, the most digital currencies, you know, they're secured by something called cryptography, which a lot of people have heard of. And that's basically the enciphering and deciphering of code. So, you know, it's, you know, securing the information to a point where no normal person can decode it, and it takes
just abnormal people.
It takes a very complex, you know, algorithm to actually decrypt that set of information.
So not just young, you know, teenagers that are male that are wearing mascara. That makes sense.
No, they're too busy playing Fortnite now anyway. So.
So
You know, the supply of, you know, the coins and cryptocurrency, you know, Bitcoin included, you know, is basically controlled by a process called mining, which most people have heard of mining.
Right.
I think if you ask the average person, how do you get Bitcoin, a lot of people would respond by mining, but they don't understand the process itself. And really, mining is just a computer or a network of computers working together to solve a whole bunch of mathematical equations. And the more powerful the computing power, the more of the quicker and larger quantity of those equations they can solve, and that actually mines you Bitcoin, or rather bits of Bitcoin, because a Bitcoin is broken down into a million parts and they're called Satoshis, and it's the same with other cryptocurrencies.
So this is completely different than a dwarf with a pickaxe?
In some ways, yes, but if you think of a lot of how many dwarfs you could, super small dwarfs you could fit into a computer, and how much mining those dwarfs could do in a certain period of time, it is actually quite similar. So if you've got a computer which has a lot of dwarfs which mine with that pickaxe a lot faster, then they can get a lot more gold than, you know.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's that's actually a pretty good analogy if you want
to. So I need to get on Amazon and try to find me one of these computers that have little miniature dwarves with pickaxes, then I can get more Bitcoin.
Maybe Google that one afterwards.
Right.
So basically, you know, these people who are mining, they're competing against each other, right?
It's a competition.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, I like
and so
that.
They collect, you know, cryptocurrency as a reward.
Are there participation trophies?
You know, actually there is, because even the you can actually mine even with the slowest piece of crap computer. Even if you spend $200 on a computer, like an entry-level computer now, say you'd pick up at Walmart or on Amazon, is actually powerful enough to get you, you know, maybe about $10 a Bitcoin a month.
A smidgen.
If you leave it running like 24/7 in the background. But
gotcha.
I mean, it will get you Bitcoin. And I mean,
okay.
You know, I mean, as long as you're not hoping to retire on it, it will get you enough to actually maybe be able to invest that Bitcoin in the various, you know, Bitcoin investment type.
Right. But by definition, that is a participation trophy.
It is. So everybody gets a little bit of Satoshi.
Everybody
gets some Satoshi. Yeah.
Gotcha.
So, you know, some cryptocurrencies, you know, especially some of the newer altcoins, which is anything which isn't a Bitcoin, basically.
Altcoin. Ooh,
anything which isn't a Bitcoin is known as an altcoin.
Ooh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It doesn't mean it listens to like Good Charlotte or Green Day. It's just,
See, you got me all excited there.
Yeah.
All right.
So some of the cryptocurrencies are actually pre-mined. And so they're kind of given away when there's a public launch.
Pre-mined.
Yeah.
Is that kind of like whenever you're getting on an airplane and then they say, we're going to call certain people to pre-board.
No.
How do you pre-board an airplane? You're still boarding the airplane. It's not like you just magically appear on the airplane and you say, oh, I pre-boarded. So is pre-mine the same as pre-boarding?
No.
Okay.
No. To go back to your dwarf scenario, it's a case of like you bought a bunch of dwarfs and they've already done some mining for the gold before you even purchase them. So they come along with some free crypto.
That sounds like a great business
plan.
Yeah,
it is. Again, we'll go to Google afterwards to see if that's possible. But you know, you and I both use Coinbase, and we've been you know, fortunate enough to be part of about between, I don't know, maybe 6 and 8 altcoin launches where they've where they've actually given us, you know, a certain value of crypto in these coins, and those were pre-mined and they just gave us those coins and we made, I don't know, maybe about $200 each for free just by watching a few seconds of video and answering questions.
Now, hang on, it wasn't free. I had to watch a video and I had to answer questions. Mm. That's not free. Those were very long videos. They were almost a minute long and they were very difficult multiple choice questions. What, that
you could get wrong as many times as you wanted, though.
Yeah, and if I would have been smart, I could have just probably guessed at the question, but I actually watched the video and still, out of A, B, C, D, I would guess A, get it wrong, B, get it wrong, and then D, get it right. So it wasn't quite free.
Yeah. And so the first thing, you know, I did, I know you kept hold of some of your altcoins as such. The first thing I did was sell them and buy more Bitcoin with them.
Ah.
You know.
Well, you know, that's the British thing to do.
Yeah. Now, there has been, obviously, you know, some people kind of, I guess, ripping people off in this pre-mining.
You don't say. Not in the computer world.
Well, not in the financial world. There's people taking advantage of people, unfortunately so. And what they've done is, you know, they've boosted the, oh yeah, this coin is, you know, going to be this price. It's going to be used for this purpose. And it, you know, boosts the price up and then they just cash out. You know, they give away all these coins and people sell them.
So what you're telling me is there are people out there trying to lead people astray to make money? Say it isn't so.
Well,
this is nothing that has ever happened. This is brand new information.
This is just a theory. Yeah. Yeah. So, well, I mean, going back to what, you know, the public generally wants to know about, say, Bitcoin, you know, the question which most people want to know is, how does it have any value?
Yes.
You know, we kind of roughly explained how you get it in the first place. Now, you can just purchase it with money. I mean, there are various exchanges and apps such as, you know, Bread and Coinbase and Brave and a number of others where you can go ahead and just literally pay regular money through a credit card or whatever and purchase, you know, cryptocurrencies, you know, and mining is the other one which most people know about. And there are websites, which again, both you and I have used before, where, you know, they'll actually pay you in Bitcoin for filling out specific tasks, such as, you know, answering surveys. So, I mean, you know, those are the three main ways, you know, to kind of get Bitcoin. So I think that answers most people's kind of, you know, how do they get some skin in the game of actually obtaining it? But
yeah, they actually, they're paying money for it. It's kind of like my kids, for instance. And it burns me up one side and down the other when my kids come in and they say, you know, can I have $5 or $10 in V-Bucks for Roblox or for Fortnite or whatever? And I'm like, well, what are you going to do with this? Why should we spend money? Yeah. Well, I want this skin or I want this gun or I want whatever. And I'm thinking, why am I using actual currency and putting it into the computer for you to have this virtual thing that you use on a video game? Mm-hmm. And it's kind of the same thing. I mean, kind of, sort of. Not quite the same thing, but it's very similar.
Well, I mean, they have a value. I mean, if you give, you know, because you can go to Walmart, you can go to GameStop, and you can actually buy these cards.
Right.
You know, a bit like gift cards with these.
Oh, my kind kids of are asking for them for Christmas.
Yeah, they want these on a card.
Yeah, they want Roblox gift cards. They want Minecraft gift cards.
Yeah.
Why are you spending your money on this game? Now, full disclosure, I may or may not have spent some money on Rocket League. So I kind of get it, maybe, but I wanted a cool goal explosion. You know, I know that's something you don't know that much about, scoring goals in Rocket League, but maybe I did spend a little bit of money on there when I score a goal in Rocket League to make it look cool.
Yeah. Well, actually that kind of thing, microtransactions on, you know, whether it be mobile phones or on, you know, gaming consoles, has come under a lot of heavy criticism.
Sure.
Certainly by the government, by saying that, you know, it lures kids into spending money unwittingly and unknowingly in some circumstances, because right. it's normally their parents' card on the account. And, you know, they end up buying 12,000 points of whatever, and it actually yep. comes to like $60 for them to buy a skin for somebody in Fortnite or something.
Right.
Now, obviously, that might be way off the mark in terms of how much it costs, but you understand that yeah. type of concept with it. So, you know, I think that kind of points out, when you tell somebody it's, you can buy 9,000 T-Zaps or you can spend $60, people generally don't understand what 9,000 T-Zaps, and I made that word up, by the way, it doesn't exist as far as I know. They generally don't know what that means, as opposed to spending $60. People know right. what spending $60 means, and this is how they lure these kids in, by selling them a currency which has no effectual meaning, that they'll for the most part won't look up. Now, obviously, if they sure. go in the, you know, Xbox store or, you know, PlayStation store, they can look up and see how much it costs to buy this. But for the most part, kids are impulse buyers. They'll click on the buy this and it will come out of the parents', you know, account.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's like my kids, you know, my youngest, he wanted certain things on Roblox, and they say it's, you know, X amount of Roblox dollars or whatever those are, right? And then he says, well, I need this amount of Roblox dollars, so to get that gift card costs this amount of American currency, so, you know, Dad, can I have $15 in real money so I can have the V-Bucks? Honestly, yeah. I think it's called V-Bucks. That he always wants.
Right.
And so then I buy this for him to keep him happy and yeah. keep him, you know, leaving me alone so he yeah. plays his video games, even though, you know, already bought the console, got the TV, everything else, and now I'm still pumping money into this thing just to keep right. him entertained.
Yeah. And I think that's where, like I said, people begin to understand that this type of cryptocurrency, even though that's a very basic form of it, because it's an immediate exchange of money for something to purchase something, because then, like I said, kids who are mostly impulse buyers will actually buy it without understanding perhaps the, you know, significance of how much money they're spending.
Right.
And, but, you know, for any currency to really have a value, it's mostly got to fulfill three criteria, and cryptocurrencies are no different.
What are those three criteria?
Well, enough people have to have it in the first place. You can't okay. just have one person having it.
Right, makes sense.
You know, merchants, and it doesn't have to be everybody. It just, even if it's a limited number of merchants, and then again, going back to computer games, it might just be one merchant. You know, one particular game which uses it, but they must accept it as a form of payment.
Okay.
Right. And society as a whole, if you want that currency to continue, it must. You know, if you want it to retain its value, then, you know, it's always got to have some exchangeable value. And like, okay. To put that into basic things, like, you know, if you go back in history and you traded a sheep for a pair of long boots, you know, the value of what you traded had to mean something to the other person, because one person wanted a sheep, the other person wanted some long boots. So sheep in itself okay. was a currency. And if you had enough pairs of boots, that in itself is a currency because you can exchange. Now, obviously, as you know,
the old school barter system.
Yeah. Now, obviously, as you know, coins and notes and actual currencies came into play, then they overtook, say, sheep being a form of currency or shiny pebbles being a form of currency.
Right.
But even in the digital world, you know, those things, that something has to have value to somebody else for them to want it. Now, in the case of something like a cryptocurrency, you know, using something like Bitcoin rather than just say a service like PayPal or Zelle or something, is because, you know, if you use the HODL model, which is the hold on for dear life, means that you're holding on to something because you think that value is going to go up.
Sure.
And then you sell it later on and you get more money than you actually paid for it. You know, and that's similar to, you know, maybe the precious metal market. You know, you buy gold, hold on to right. it for 20 years and it's going to go up.
Yeah. And of course, nobody's actually going out there and hoarding cash, thinking that cash is going to go up in value. They're going to always think a dollar is a dollar. A dollar is always worth a dollar. So I'm not going to run down to the bank and say, I want $10,000 in $1 bills so I can put those in my house, and one day those $1 bills are somehow going to be worth more than a dollar.
Yeah. But we've been hoodwinked in a way. You know, in the United States, we lost, or they removed rather, the gold standard for the dollar almost 50 years ago. It's 49 years ago, 1971, they removed the gold standard.
1971, wow. It was that long ago.
And,
okay.
And so basically, you know, a dollar is worth what you can exchange it for. It doesn't have a consistent value. So say if you have a Bitcoin.
But before now, this dollar was worth a dollar's worth of gold.
Well, yeah, but
roughly,
now, but now
not
it's
getting
not,
too deep, but yeah.
Yeah, but now it's not backed by anything. So, I mean, you might find out
so
a
that,
dollar
so
one.
So that's where you get that whole full faith and credit of the U.S. government is what a dollar's worth.
So, I mean, obviously that's why you run into problems if you have governments which print, you know, too much currency, the currency itself, you know, becomes almost worthless, and you get stuff like hyperinflation, and then it costs you $10,000 to buy a Snickers bar.
Right.
So a dollar, what people conceive of a dollar is only what I can get in exchange for that dollar.
Exactly.
That dollar itself has no value past what I can purchase.
Sure. So if you go back to the old barter system, right, and I'm a, let's use your example. So I'm a sheep farmer and you're a cobbler. So you've got the boots and I've got the sheep, and you need the wool for the sheep. I can say, well, my sheep is worth maybe 3 boots, but now all of a sudden you're making better boots. Now my sheep might only be worth 2 boots.
Right. Yeah.
So that barter system kind of keeps those values in check based off supply and demand. And now we're getting way deep into, you know, economics and everything. So let's back up.
Yeah. So before we go into our regular Stump the Shepherd section, which, you know, sometimes...
Are we really doing that again?
Yeah.
Oh, here we go.
You know those ones we have where it's like almost impossible for you to be correct? This one's like, it's absolutely impossible for you to be correct, kind of.
Oh, okay.
Even guessing, you're probably going to get the wrong answer, even if there's only 2 answers. Both wrong. I don't know.
Why do you do this to me?
Because it's fun.
Okay.
So anyway, just going back to Bitcoin a little bit, because again, that's the one which, you know, pretty much anybody's heard of cryptocurrency. That's what they've heard. You know, Bitcoin was the first ever cryptocurrency.
Sure.
Right? I mean, there were other types of digital exchange, but you wouldn't specifically be able to call it a cryptocurrency in terms of
kind of like PayPal was, right? I mean there was kind of a way you could move money around digitally, but it was still based off of
pay with like 4 PayPals. I mean, it was still, it still held US dollars. It was just an online bank, one of the first online banks. And you know, there were attempts at creating digital currencies before, but they failed. Certainly, governments tried to do it as a way of, you know, and we're not saying that any governments ever do anything nefarious, but it was a way of wanting to exchange money between one country and another and it being untraceable.
Right.
But again, at that point when it first started, you know, there were so many vulnerabilities. And like they always say, you know, the best research and products actually come out of private, you know, enterprises and companies, and then the government buys them out or develops it from that point.
Sure.
And, you know, cryptocurrency was one of those. So Bitcoin was, you know, one of the first currencies to come into effect, and the only one which has kind of stayed the course.
So who came up with this Bitcoin?
Well, you know, there's a lot of theories that the person who they credit with it was the name, I can't remember his name now off the top of my head, but it was a made-up name. It was made up of acronyms.
Is it Stump the Wolf time?
But it was something
Satoshi?
Like...
Satoshi?
And was it
Nagamoto?
Nagaramanamadingdong,
something like that.
But when you break it down, it's actually made up of acronyms, and they say that it wasn't just one person, it was multiple people who actually came
together.
I'm
sure it was.
And did it. And...
Or are we sure?
No, nah, we're
maybe,
not sure.
Maybe it was aliens.
Yeah. So it was...
It was aliens, wasn't it?
I'd like to think so.
Yeah, I think it was.
So, you know, Bitcoin really came into, I guess, notoriety on the internet and various forums and stuff in about 2010.
Okay.
You know, people became aware of cryptocurrency and started getting interested in, you know, the nerds, of which I was one. You know, found the whole kind of thought of a, you know, new currency you could use worldwide, and it was pretty much anonymous and all this, you know, pretty interesting. And it was going to be one of those things, well, you know, imagine if this, you know, becomes a, you know, currency which overcomes, you know, your regular currency like the dollar. And so, but, you know, it took a long time before, you know, enough people knew about it and before it actually got a decent value. And, you know, other altcoins appeared, you know, such as Litecoin. You know, a lot of people have heard of Litecoin. And that's the kind of silver to Bitcoin's gold, I guess, if you want to compare.
Gotcha.
It's always, you know, had a much lower value. But, you know, as we mentioned earlier, because it's decentralized, Bitcoin reduces the possibility of corruption. You know, I know that even with something like PayPal, you know, you can find the username, password to somebody's PayPal account and spend their money.
Yeah, and of course, everybody links their PayPal account to their bank account so they can buy stuff through PayPal and have it drafted out of their account and all that good stuff. So, yeah, I mean, if you got a hold of somebody's username and password for PayPal, you could all of a sudden send yourself a bunch of money out of their bank account.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, well, I mean, it's just the same thing as getting hold of somebody's physical debit or credit card, as long as you know, the PIN number or whatever. But as we were saying, you know, with regular currencies, you do have this situation, you know, of quantitative easing where banks simply just print money, you know, when they're faced with like economic problems, which are mostly caused by governments making bad decisions, you know, misspending money. But Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, because there's a limit on how many of those coins can ever be in circulation, they're never going to suffer from that quantitative easing thing. Nobody's going to suddenly put out their, you know, another 50 million Bitcoin. It can't be done. There's a limited amount. And as I said, one Bitcoin is made up of a million Satoshis. But once all of those are mined and they're in circulation, now the value of each one of those little Satoshis can equate to a different amount of regular currency, you know, the dollar as such. And it could get to, I don't know, some theoretical point that one Satoshi could equal $1. But you're never going to have more Bitcoins in circulation than there are at the moment. So having given that background to Bitcoin, you know, the Stump the Shepherd thing is mainly based around Bitcoin. And this, as you and I have a little bit of Bitcoin and we've done a little bit of research and maybe kind of been interested in Bitcoin for the last two, three years.
And by the way, full disclosure, we do own a little bit of Bitcoin.
Yes.
We're definitely not controlling 51% of the market of Bitcoin.
No.
But wouldn't that be nice? Because if we were, we wouldn't be doing this podcast.
Let's be honest. No, I probably wouldn't be out of bed by now, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. So question number one. What do you think the first purchase using Bitcoin was for?
A pizza.
It was a pizza.
It was a pizza. And I remember this article, and it was a ridiculous amount of Bitcoin that is now worth like millions of dollars.
Well, it was on May 22nd, 2010, and this guy bought two Papa John's pizzas for 10,000 Bitcoin.
Oh my gosh.
And at that time, that 10,000 Bitcoin came to roughly about $41.
Right. Okay, so now hang on. Obviously, we're still too lazy to video these podcasts. So I know that a Bitcoin today was around $19,000 of Bitcoin.
So it's around $190 million.
And this dude paid $10,000
for simple
that.
Simple math, $190 million. Just add some zeros.
But okay. So it's, it's $190 million
it comes.
What kind of pizza did he get?
I don't know, but I was thinking for it to be $41 like 10 years ago, and either the delivery driver wanted a huge tip, or he must have got like about six toppings on each of those pizzas.
$41.
I hope
they didn't get pineapple on that pizza. that would just make the story more disappointing.
But so he bought two pizzas for what today would be $190 million.
Wow!
And because, you know, in 2010, Bitcoin was worth $0.0015, which is roughly a seventh of a cent.
Crazy.
A seventh of a cent.
That guy's got to be hating life. You know, just imagine being that dude right now. Because obviously, you didn't stump me on that one, but that's kind of a famous story.
Yeah.
And he knows that story comes up right. every time Bitcoin, you know, goes up, goes down, or whatever. Somebody's comparing the whole pizza thing. That guy just has got to hate life.
Yeah.
He has to hate life.
Well, I'd have hated life even if I'd have just spent 41 regular dollars on two pizzas, to be honest with you.
Yeah. So. No, that's a good point.
Maybe he wasn't renowned for making smart decisions, period.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Right. Now, I know we touched on this earlier, but I wanted to ask you this question.
Okay.
Just so it kind of gives the, you know, listeners a bit more
depth into something. But before we go any further, for the record, I'm 1-for-1 right now.
Yeah.
On never trying to stump me.
It's never happened.
So right now I have a perfect score.
Yeah.
Let's just make that clear.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So... like I said, I know we touched on this.
I know,
but
I know
Bitcoin,
this is Bitcoin
truly anonymous?
No.
It's well, it kind of is and it kind of isn't. Remember I said that this is one of those where it doesn't matter what you answer, you're still going to be wrong to some extent.
Right.
Unless you're using a few trade secrets, like washing your Bitcoin, there's this process of passing it through multiple wallets. And those wallet address, you generate in a new wallet address for the same wallet. That you can make it next to untraceable. So unless you're doing something really bad, nobody, and spending an awful lot of money, nobody's really going to take the time to actually find out where this money is going, where it came from, everything else. So you can make it as anonymous as it possibly can be. You look at the amount of time it took, you know, the FBI to maybe catch, you know, certain, you know, drug websites, you know, on the dark web,
right?
That even with all that manpower and all that money changing hands, it still took a long time before they, you know, got to the actual person behind. And I think it's called the Silk Road. And the only reason they actually did catch him was because he made a stupid error.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't because if he had have kept true with what he was doing, they probably would not have been able to track him down.
That's how most criminals get caught, though, with stupid errors.
Yeah. And you know, I mentioned earlier that the Bitcoin blockchain, that ledger, is a permanent ledger and it is transparent as long as you have, you know, the wallet address. But, you know, with most, well, and if not all, you know, digital wallets now, the address changes after a specific point of time.
Right.
And there's no way to relate without the algorithm or your passcode. You can't connect one wallet to another wallet.
Sure.
So, you know, if you made a transaction next month and your wallet address had changed, there'd be no way, despite the fact this ledger is transparent, to connect your second wallet address to your first wallet address. Now, they can see if multiple addresses are making, you know, exchanges with a singular wallet address. But again, if that singular wallet destination or initiation is constantly changing, it gets to a point where it becomes, again, almost impossible to, you know, track those transactions.
Makes sense.
So I know that actually this one you might know the answer to, because I know we've had this discussion before.
Okay.
How many total Bitcoins are there?
21 million.
There are 21 million.
Oh, look at me go. It's finally something I know a little bit about.
Well, we've had like 50 conversations on this in the last 3 years. But,
fair enough, yes.
You know, and the estimates are that the last one will be mined sometime around 2140, at which point every one of those 21 million Bitcoins will be in circulation. But as we mentioned, because each of those Bitcoins consists of 1 million Satoshis, that allows for 21 followed by 12 zeros or 12.1E13, whatever the heck that means. So there's plenty to go around. So I think that roughly works out. If there's 7.6 billion people on the earth at the moment, they'd basically be able to own between 1700 and 1800 Satoshis each. And if the price of Bitcoin goes up to the point where, like I said, one of those Satoshis is worth $1 each or $10 each, you know, everybody on the face of the planet could earn a piece of Bitcoin and still have a significant amount of money to use as a transfer.
Makes sense.
Right. Now, this one, I'm guaranteed you're not going to get.
I knew one of those were coming because I'm doing well. I'm doing much better than I typically do during these little segments. So,
well, normally you get zero.
Yeah,
so,
well, yeah. Here's where it all falls apart, right?
Okay. So, as of April 2020, when you know, they probably stopped counting just, after that because
just
there was
before
some reason,
the age of COVID.
Some
just
reason,
before
some,
the
something
age
came
of
along,
COVID.
Something yeah. came along which kind of yeah. Diverted people's attention. But how many different cryptocurrencies do you think there are out there?
Yeah, see, this is why I hate you. I'm going to guess 2,000.
No. There were, as of April 2020, 5,392 different cryptocurrencies.
Wow.
Now,
so
I remember looking,
that one.
I remember looking maybe 18 months ago, and I think there was like 2,200, 2,300. So over the last kind of year and a half, I mean, it's really,
yeah,
you know,
they
come through.
Obviously, they doubled. There's a lot more.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, to the end of like last year, okay. How many cryptocurrencies do you think have failed? And when I say fail, I mean the value has gone to essentially zero and there's no chance of a resurrection
so,
of that currency.
So kind of like a penny stock that just goes to 0.0001 cents a share, which essentially means it's bankrupt.
And goodness knows how many of those are, like we talked about earlier, people deliberately crashing it once they cashed out the you know, currency.
All right, so the question is, how many of these other altcoins have failed? Now, are we going off this 5,000 number of how many have failed?
Four months previous. So let's say roughly about 5,000 or so.
Okay. Of those 5,000, how many have failed? I'm going to go with 4,500.
No, it's actually only about just over 1,000.
Really?
So roughly about 20%.
That's not bad.
Would be considered as failed because they have no value or resurrected value. And that doesn't mean there might not be another 40% who are close to it or just kind of holding on,
bubbling
under the surface.
But okay, but let's use your theory here, right? Let's use your rationale. 80% of them still have value.
Yeah, but such a minute value that even if you held every single coin in circulation, you still might only have $3 and you've got nobody left to, maybe other than one person in Denmark, you know,
right,
and buy one of their slippers.
Yeah, but you know what? If you got $2 in it and you hold all the coins and it's worth $3, that's a 50% gain. I'm just saying.
Well,
I mean, the math works out.
Well,
numbers don't lie.
But then we have to go back to that, what defines a currency. And like I said, if the only person you can trade it with is that old guy in Denmark who will sell you one of his used slippers for that cryptocurrency, it's not really worth...
Yeah, but maybe there's a big market in Denmark for used slippers.
Well, I don't know.
You don't know.
Anyway, that kind of, you know, thing might fall into the 40% of near on dead.
I'm trying to be glass half full. You're trying to be glass half empty.
No, you're trying to sell somebody some cryptocurrency you're trying to get rid of.
No, I just want some used shoes from Denmark.
Okay. I'm sure you can do that. There's got to be like the Denmark eBay where you can buy refurbished slippers.
Yeah.
From like, they bought them for some grandparents for Christmas and then they died in like February, so they're barely used.
I wonder if the people from Holland ship over their wooden shoes over there to Denmark.
So you're saying like people in Holland will sell their clogs to people in Denmark?
Yeah.
Why?
To try to make this fake cryptocurrency have some value.
You do remember we made up this scenario, right?
Oh. Sorry.
It's not a real thing.
Oh, okay.
Unlike the...
You got me all excited. I was about to get on eBay right now and try to find a fake cryptocurrency to buy Denmark versions of wooden shoes from Holland. But once again, you know that wasn't going to happen.
Unlike the mining dwarves, this is not a real life scenario.
Oh, I forgot about that already. I'm glad
so why should people use something like Bitcoin? I mean, we've explained what it is, how you get it, how it has value, but why should people be using? Now, this isn't part of Stump the Shepherd. I'm kind of moving on to explain most other people's questions about, why should I bother using it?
I'm sitting here trying to figure out how I'm going to explain that and knowing I'm going to get it wrong based off your little notes that you're holding. So, good.
For one thing, you know, people don't like government having too much power. And when you use traditional cash, use fiat, currencies, you're giving away all of the control to the central banks, and the government at any time can actually freeze your bank account and deny you access to your funds.
Right.
You know, any government can do that. You know, they can abolish coins and notes. You know, let's use a big country as an example. I think it was India back in 2016. They actually got rid of their currency, just completely took it out of circulation. Whereas with cryptocurrencies, you and only you, as long as you're not giving away your, you know, wallet address, passcodes, can access your funds. And so, you know, with that, cryptocurrencies abolish the whole type of banks and middlemen taking their cut. You know, you don't need a bank account. You know, you don't have credit checks.
Right.
And basically anybody with access to the internet, whether it be through a computer or a phone, you know, they can earn Bitcoin, buy Bitcoin, and they can make transactions. So, you know, that electronic wallet, you know, that's basically your bank account, and that belongs to you and you only. So, I mean, that people see that, you know, as a little bit of as a safety net. And with more and more places now accepting Bitcoin, more and more things you can buy, you know, it is becoming more and more of an accepted kind of, I guess, idea that maybe this might not be a bad currency to actually hold. If I have to invest in something, then how about I invest in something which, you know, will have some value, and if everything went terrible with our economy, I still have something which is worth something. You know, now I know we spoke, you know, a while back about, you know, the number of increasing, I guess, merchants which accept, you know, Bitcoin and some other coins, because there, I know there are some merchants which accept Litecoin and Ethereum, but with Bitcoin, you know, some of the bigger names, which I really didn't know, you know, they accepted Bitcoin.
Okay.
Microsoft have been accepting Bitcoin since 2014, okay. So 6 years, and I didn't know.
Wow. Okay, so you can go on the Microsoft store and buy something with Bitcoin.
So if you wanted to really throw your kids for a loop rather than buying those V-Bucks, they could use real money to buy Bitcoin and then use that Bitcoin to buy those V-Bucks. So then they'd have absolutely no clue how much money they'd spend.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that really throws things over. Yeah.
Uh-huh. What about Apple?
Not at this point. They're going to come up. They're looking to come up with their own, just like Facebook. They want to come up with their own digital currency.
Well, didn't Facebook already come up with theirs, the Libra or something like that?
The planning was there, but I don't think at the moment there's too many exchanges other than buying, say, features on Facebook itself. You know, because there's these little microtransactions on Facebook you can do, and I think that's the only thing you can do it. But I think, again, you have to buy it for real cash, and I don't know, again, if the value of that currency goes up or down. I'm not sure. I haven't looked into it that much.
Yeah, it makes sense.
But Overstock.com, I mean, you know, they've been accepting cryptocurrency for quite a while. Starbucks have. I don't know when that started.
Starbucks? Mm. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
It'd be a shame if you really didn't have that much money, and at one point you were kind of like, yeah, I'm going to go buy myself like a tall coffee, and then you get there and like you only have enough money to buy like a cookie or something, and not a good example, because cookies cost more than coffee.
Yeah, everything at Starbucks is so expensive. I mean, I can imagine them not looking at what a Bitcoin's actually worth, and you paid $19,000 for a cup of coffee.
Yeah. Well, a lot of these transactions are obviously online and not at point of sale, because it can take so long. You know, I mean, as you know, when you and I have sent Bitcoin to each other before, and with the one we've most frequently used, there's three methods of transfer. There's like economy, standard, and like a premium type one.
Right.
And the network fee, and that is the fee which goes with transaction, just like a credit card fee or whatever, changes depending on how fast you want that money to get there. Now, if you use the economy one and it can take between 1 and 24 hours for that to get there, that wouldn't be a good thing to have a point of sale, say in a Starbucks, and you pay them enough for a coffee, but Bitcoin drops like $3,000 overnight. And then by the time it goes into the Starbucks wallet, you know, it's only worth 3/4 of, a coffee. So, I mean, most of these transactions are online, and once, you know, it's been verified, you know, in the blockchain, that's, you know, when that transaction occurs. And, I was thinking about that because Home Depot actually accept Bitcoin.
Hmm.
So you can buy things on their website, I'm assuming, with Bitcoin. So again, that would be a terrible, you know, because of the price of some of the, you know, things in Home Depot to have a point of sale thing.
Well, so I look at it kind of the delay that you're talking about. I remember when my mom would take me to Dillard's department store years ago, and she had a charge card at Dillard's, and they had this machine that she put her card in, they put a piece of paper on there, they wrapped that machine down, and it was a carbon copy thing. She signed that carbon copy receipt. They didn't immediately transact that.
Right.
They had to submit that little form through their ancient computer network, and it wasn't like it is today where you go to the store and you swipe a card and they immediately say yes, they have enough money in the bank, or no, they don't. It was an old school method. I mean, you could literally, if you think about it, you could have probably went in there and maxed out your account way above what your credit limit was. And so now that we have this digital aspect and the immediacy of trying to figure out where this is, it's kind of like that. So we're going to get there. We're going to get there eventually, but it's still in that infancy of the old carbon copy, wrapping that thing down, rubbing the ballpoint pen across it to do the little carbon copy thing, so you have the account numbers or whatever from the card. We'll get there.
Yeah, and I guess even in the days when people used to write more checks, I mean, you never knew that the bank might take out some stupid $1.99 charge for something and your check's suddenly no good.
Right.
And also banks holding on to, when you'd pay with a credit card, they'd hold on to the fees before releasing them for 3 days. So, I mean,
they still do that at the gas pump.
Yeah, but you were dealing with actual money, again, a fiat currency where it had a standard value. So, yeah, you could go overdrawn. You might, buy something and max out your account and go overdrawn. But that opportunity to do that doesn't exist with cryptocurrency, because you can only spend what you have. And it's really on the other end of it, that merchant, to make sure their system in place gets them the amount of money that the product or service they're selling you is worth. So, I mean, it's a little bit different in respect to that. Whole Foods, AT&T, PayPal recently, are all starting to accept Bitcoin.
Yeah, PayPal made this big announcement that now you can go into PayPal and you can buy into Bitcoin.
Yeah.
That's big, because PayPal was one of those first merchants that gave you the ability to move money around the internet and not accept credit cards. And, if you and I lived a world apart, I could send you money through PayPal via the internet.
Yeah.
And so now PayPal's jumped on it and said, hey, we'll go ahead and do Bitcoin.
Yeah. Well, I think essentially, the way they're operating is just a kind of lower end exchange, so they can make a commission out of a transaction.
Sure.
And obviously with something the size of PayPal, they see that, a certain number of people use Bitcoin through PayPal that, there's enough money to be skimmed at a low enough level that, they can make some money off something which they're not really having to control themselves so much, because, they don't control Bitcoin.
Well, it's all a money-making opportunity, and they see the ability to try to bring cryptocurrency to the mainstream and say, hey, if you don't know what Bitcoin's all about, hey, you can buy some of it through our service. You know what PayPal's all about. Yeah. So why not buy a little bit of Bitcoin?
Yeah.
Robinhood is another one that's a, online brokerage where you can buy stocks and do all that. And they got into the cryptocurrency, and you can buy that through them. So it's starting to get a little more mainstream to let people, dip their pinky toe into the pool and say, let me buy a little bit of this and see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously not for everybody. And like any other investment, even if you just buy regular stocks and shares, you can't. It's not smart to wager more than you can afford to lose.
It's Vegas.
Yeah.
It's Vegas right now. And that's unfair a little bit, but it's still Vegas because it's very volatile and nobody knows exactly what's going to happen. So you got to speculate. You got to use your gambling money.
Yeah. And,
you don't want to liquidate your 401k and say, I'm going to put all this in Bitcoin and hope for the best.
Yeah.
Because tomorrow you could be broke,
but
tomorrow you could be a billionaire.
Well, exactly. Like the guy who bought the pizza, if he could hold on for another 10 years.
There you go. That's a perfect example.
You know.
I mean, he looked at that as, I'm taking this virtually worthless cryptocurrency and I'm feeding myself. I'm hungry.
Yeah.
But if he'd have held on to it, he'd have been a billionaire.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, obviously these digital currencies are here to stay. What we understand as cryptocurrencies are probably not going to change very much in how they're structured, but we are going to get kind of bastardized forms of it, like we said, with Apple Pay, Google Pay, and, you know, whatever Facebook are operating. But that's still based upon the actual value of a regular fiat currency to purchase essentially the same thing, but you just call it a different name. Because all Google Pay or Apple Pay is, it's just dollars, but they just call it a different, you know, it's just another bank account like PayPal, basically. It's electronic bank account. So, you know, as we said, you know, don't rush out and buy cryptocurrency. We've been, even though we've been, I won't say super knowledgeable on it, because we're absolutely not, for maybe, you know, 3 years or so or more even, you know, we've never really put in much money at all. In fact, I haven't put any money in. I got all my cryptocurrency from doing surveys and from mining.
Right.
You know, so I didn't want to put any money in whatsoever.
No, I put a little bit of money in it, but it'd be the same as me going up to a casino and, you know, walking up to a roulette table and putting some money on black and watching the ball go around the wheel. It's gambling right now.
Yeah.
But I think what we're going to see eventually is it get much more mainstream. We're getting closer. We're still a ways away, but it's going to get very mainstream very quickly.
Yeah.
So, and with that, thanks for tuning into this episode of The Wolf and the Shepherd. If you would like to send us some Bitcoin, please send us an email and we will give you a wallet address and tell you exactly where to send that Bitcoin to, because we will accept that as a donation. But in all honesty, we appreciate the support and we'll catch you on the next one.